Monday. Welcome back to Morning Coffee. My name is Rick Alexander, and today I don't think I'm going to need long, but I do want to make a case for why the ego, it's not the enemy. So first we need to talk about what the ego is. We need to talk about like what the difference is between the self, the ego, the persona, and all the different parts of ourselves. So coming on the back of the modern analytical psychology movement, on the back of Freud and Carl Jung, we began to break down the psyche into parts so that we could better understand how to make sense of it. And then, of course, when it comes to psychoanalysis, you can actually analyze why you're doing what you're doing. And so that was the whole idea behind breaking down the different animating forces that are kind of within you. And so in my new book, I actually break down, I talk about, there's a chapter called The Soul's Keeper, where I do talk about the ego and how it shows up in our lives, and how really what the ego is there patterns of thought, right? And so you've been taught implicitly and explicitly as you move through the world how to do so. And so every time you've learned anything at all, or every time you've witnessed something, something in the back of your mind, you could say, is sort of etching on your subconscious, telling you this is how to be. Don't do that. Do that. Act like this. Don't act like that. And this is what the ego is made of. Now, when you say I am hungry, I am this, I'm doing that, I'm running, that's the ego, right? So anything you think of when you think of I, that's the lens of what the ego is. So everything that you're encapsulated in is I. Now, interestingly enough, the word ego actually comes from both Latin and Greek and means I, right? So there wasn't an actual English word for ego until it got translated from Latin and Greek and into English. So it's I. It is the I that you think of. Now, persona is a little bit different than what ego is. So persona, that's the mask that you wear for the rest of the world. Okay, so that's the way that you show up. Now, what happens is the ego feels as though it has certain roles that it has to play in life. And based on what it thinks it's got to be, in order to attain love, in order to attain validation, in order to attain belonging, it puts on the certain mask that it thinks it needs to be, whatever it thinks that you are, right? So you're funny, sometimes, like for me growing up, oftentimes I was sort of the angry person, right? The reason is because that was sort of the persona that I learned to live by. And anytime I found myself in a situation that was sort of testing me or making me uncomfortable, I figured out that I could center myself by resorting to anger. And so that, at the end of the day, what happens is your ego learns all of these coping mechanisms. So for how this I can exist in the world. So I've talked about this idea of an ideaplex as you're growing up. So when you're first coming into the world, you really don't have any conception of I and other, right? Everything is just is, and you're sort of experiencing everything in one continuous sort of flow of or stream of consciousness. And then what happens is you're taught words, and what you use those words for is to start breaking all of your reality up into parts so that you can better understand it. And so you start to label things. Now, that helps us identify and navigate the world, of course, but it's also very limiting. For example, in Hindu culture, something that's very interesting is when people they want to go get closer to the gods in Hindu culture, after they sort of it's something that they do after they've gone through their caste system and they've retired from whatever they've done for their work, they'll kind of go out into the woods and the practice is looking at the world without words. So it's, you're beginning to experience the world in one state of consciousness again. And so that's the goal of why they do that. They're trying to unlearn the ideaplex. But of course we need this in order to navigate the world. Now, there's also like a way to break down the ego in the spiritual context, which is the ego is a manifestation of you here in this physical place, right? Because without the I, you would be disembodied. You'd be something else, right? You'd be soul, you'd be spirit, you'd be something along those lines. All right. Now, when we talk about the self, we're talking about everything that you actually are. So that's all of the parts that that's the ego, the superego, the id, that's the soul, that's spirit, that's all of the parts of you. Okay, and so the reason that I want to break this down in this way and it's because, first of all, we tend to, we don't really question our own reality oftentimes. And so we don't really think about how it got here and why it is and how we're navigating it and whether that's even useful or not, right? We kind of inherit the template that we're given. And that really does play itself out in our mind as something like a flow chart. And so the reason that I wanted to break everything down this way so that you can understand, you know, we can piece apart parts of ourselves, we can piece apart the world, and we do that to better understand it, right? That's why in psychology they break down the psyche into its sort of component or constituent parts, because we can better understand when certain parts of you are being motivated by certain things, and we can root out and figure out what those are. So there are times when breaking up reality makes a lot of sense and it really works for us to help navigate and make sense of things. But there are other times where it really doesn't. Now, one of the places where it really doesn't is if you begin to break yourself into all of your constituent parts, right? But then you begin to engage in some sort of an internal war. And so the idea of the ego being the enemy, so we think of the ego as this. Well, in modern culture, we tend to think you've heard people refer to as, you know, egotistical, or you've heard the word egotism. It's like this idea of this like really inflated, you know, overconfident self, or, you know, this sort of maniacal bully. But remember, the ego is just I. Now, is an inflated ego a problem that you want to work through? Yes, of course it is. But if you begin to treat yourself as if you are the enemy, you begin to start a war that gets really hard to end. And I think most of us have an idea or an understanding of how brutal the inner war can really be. Like for me, I have a really inflated superego. So it's like it almost is the thing that tells you, you know, right from wrong. Mine is like really, really inflated. So if I ever do anything that's even close to the other side of wrong, then I'm constantly berated by my own psyche for that. And so this is the problem with beginning to treat parts of yourself as if you are the enemy, as you start to create these divisions. And so then you have something to actually fight against. And so like we talked about in the Martin Luther King episode, the idea that somebody has to put down the rock, somebody's got to put down the weapon, somebody's got to stop the cycle. Otherwise, it will just continue forever. Oftentimes, what happens is when we treat parts of ourselves as if we are the enemy, we are creating an inner dialogue that is adversarial to ourselves. And, you know, there's a way you could say that you can approach the world as if either everything is adversarial to you or nothing at all is. And if you find that nothing at all is, well, that means that it's not bypassing the problem. It's actually, you have to look at the problem as if they are there for you. That's the whole idea behind doing that. But if you approach the world as if something can be adversarial to you, what you'll find is that you are constantly adversarial to something else, because there will never be a shortage of things to be against you, of parts to be against you. And again, when we think about the ego and we think of just these like layers of patterned thought and behavior that we've had sort of pushed into our minds as the way of being in the world, the last thing that you want to do is be at war with that thing, right? Really what you want to do is you want to observe yourself objectively, watch where it's not really working for you. Once you see where it's not working for you, you've now created awareness, and now you can begin to repattern yourself. Because at the end of the day, you know, you could think about your life as a whole set of patterns. Now, there are certain patterns in reality that if you live out, they're going to lead you to a more successful life. And there are other patterns that if you live out, they're going to lead you to an unsuccessful life, a really lonely life, depends on what the pattern is. But you can just see that, like, oftentimes what happens, behavior that's good or behavior that's bad, is actually the result of good or bad patterning that we have been living out. And so it's not about creating an enemy within the self. Again, that's a battle that you'll never win. Like, nobody actually wins from conflict. That's the thing to understand, especially unproductive conflict that's met with adversary. So what you want to do is figure out the patterns that your ego has learned to move through the world by, and you want to create awareness around where those are helping you and where those aren't helping you. And where they're not helping you, this is difficult too, because this introduces the idea of coping mechanisms and all the things that we do in order to not subject ourselves. Like I told you, when I was younger, I would often, if I felt like I was off center, it would just help me. I could get angry, or I could be an asshole. I could be overtly aggressive and I could get what I wanted, which centered me, but really didn't work in the broad, you know, scheme of what I was trying to accomplish with my life. And so, like, what I really want to do there is I just want to learn how I'm being in the world. How am I actually showing up? Get a little objectivity to it, right? That's another really good thing about breaking up your psyche into the constituent parts as you realize, like, oh, that's not me, right? I'm the awareness of these things. So I'm something deeper. I'm something bigger. I'm behind all of the action, watching it take place. And so you get a little objectivity from yourself. You watch the patterns. You observe the patterns that are playing out in your reality. And then you can begin to take control over the ones that you don't like. But that's a much different approach than treating yourself as if you are some enemy or some problem that you have to try to fix. If that's the case, what you'll find is you begin a war that just won't ever end. You'll never actually beat yourself. There's no self to beat. The you that you're talking about is behind all of the action. You are the observer. You are the witness to your life. Now, that provides a little bit of empowerment, because if you understand that, it gives you the objectivity to realize, okay, just because I'm patterned to react like this, but just because I'm patterned to think like this, doesn't mean that's absolutely how it has to be. And so that gives you the control, or at least the awareness of what you are trying to control. Again, though, far different than treating yourself as if you are the enemy. And the reason I say that is because I've done it in my own life for so damn long. Like, really, like, you know, once you start getting into this idea of a higher and a lower self, and it becomes adversarial, you'll realize rather quickly, or hopefully rather quickly, that you are engaging in a battle that nobody actually wins. And you wouldn't even be able to know, was this your higher or lower self? Because perhaps it's your lower self acting as if it's the higher self. And like, it just goes round and round and round, and you get stuck in these mental battles. And so it's just a construct that really is unhelpful. Like, I know that people have found in this world, and I was one of them, that you can really get ahead by being adversarial, right? You can put the chip on your shoulder. You can use hate to push you forward. You can, like, all of those things are true, but they're very limited in their utility to give you an actual prosperous life, right? Like, just because you can hate yourself to get to a finish line doesn't mean that that's going to get you the family life that you want, or the economic situation that you want, or you know, the list goes on and on. It's like, hate is a very limited in its utility ability. And, you know, treat yourself as if you're the enemy and just see how long that really works for you. Like, you find out, like I said, rather quickly that you're engaged in a battle that nobody really wins. So just wanted to put that out there, because I know it's very easy for us to beat ourselves up, to play the tyrant in our own lives. I know nobody is as harsh on me as I am, right? But at the end of the day, understand that that's not a battle that you can go into with guns blazing and think that you're going to win. Actually, the real thing going on, the mental construct going on, is much more nuanced than that. It has to start with awareness, and then it can progress to choice. But fighting is not going to get you anywhere that you want to be, especially when it's yourself that you're fighting. So just wanted to make a case for why the ego is not the enemy. I hope you guys have an amazing day. We'll talk later on Morning Coffee.